Blog Talk Radio.
The plumber in Tent City, Mr. President, if I could ask you one simple question, is how could you make Timothy Guyton the head of the Treasury?
You know what? Never mind, I get it. You don't even have to say, you're just a spokesman, right? Same snake, new face,
ain't the Hope for Change campaign. Seriously, that was clever, cause hope is just a word, and you're the best lie ever. That's 16 months and you start bringing him back, but you haven't, you've expanded, now you're trying to pass a draft. You said you cared about our families, but now it's clear to see that you don't give a fuck about us. All you care about is wealth, not peace, not dreams, certainly not me, but I don't see you as my chief. You're just a white collar thief, another Tavistock production, trilateral connection, a Bilderberg commercial, and kissing just little messenger. I heard you with Kennedy, yes, I'm thinking more like Mussolini with the youth brigades and stars. Yeah, just call him and I'll see him and say, yes, we can, yes, we can, yes, we can. What? I just got one more question here. Obama, what are you taking?
He was a righteous man. The sort of people invite this man to make newer policies. The same laws they never will see. Except to support righteous men. Why did the people invite this man to make newer policies? Somebody help me please understand.
Yeah, a black man in a white place, yo. The Uncle Tom of my space, yeah. Yo, I'm glad I went and said it. I'll say it and I'll say it loud, yo. Fuck the president. Ooh, no sucker boo. This silly cat's trying to rob you.
Yo, say what? Yo, what you mean he trying to get us? An intelligent black man, I think you're jealous.
Yo, sucker, please go do your research. The big new and Kissinger were his teachers. Yo, why you gotta go and hate on a brother? You know that's what they want us to do to each other.
Yo, true that, but the truth takes precedence. All anyone can really do is weigh the evidence.
And if you can't see the Wall Street cronies claiming all the turf for themselves and they homies, then you about to get jacked for your home. When you out on the street and you can't get a loan, and catch you thinking, would you do it again? Give your vote to a black man just because he said he was a righteous man.
The sort of people invite this man to make newer policies. The same laws they never will see. Except to support righteous men. Why did the people invite this man to make newer policies? Somebody help me please understand.
Oh, no, you're not a righteous man, no, no. Oh, no, you're not a righteous man, no.
All right, here we are once again. It's been a great week so far. Today's date is September 13th. 2011 AD. We're here in beautiful Washington, D.C. It's beautiful this time of year. The United States of America, planet Earth, third planet from the sun. And it's been a heavy news day today. Lots going on. Union protesters lobbing racial slurs. Yeah, that's what's happening. Didn't think they did that sort of thing, did you? Well, that's what's going down. Federal judge today ruled that the insurance buying mandate in the health care reform law is unconstitutional, just a week after a judge in another state ruled through the case out in favor of Obamacare. So we've got some dueling going on here. We suspect that that Obamacare will still head for the Supreme Court and we'll get a proper judgment there. And I'm looking forward to that. It should be interesting. You know, I am so hoping that this health care law is struck down because truly the interesting part of it is that I've had health care and private health care for a very long time. And, you know, whenever I need to go see the doctor, I make an appointment and I go in and I get good health care and, you know, everything's great. And I have no problem, no problem at all. And life is good. Now, there will be those who will say that, well, yeah, Jones, you get really good health care, but what about those people who don't? What about those people who can't afford it? Well, the way I see it, I'm not actually my brother's keeper. So I'm not so sure if it's my place to worry about whether or not another person gets good quality health care. I know it sounds callous, but I should be more concerned with my family, my extended family, those types of people. And then if there's anything left, you know, then those less fortunate, you know, I give my time to and, you know, my resources. And that's the way it should be. But I don't believe that my health care should suffer so that another person can have health care. I don't think that makes a whole lot of sense. I know I'll meet, you know, there are those who will say, well, you know, really, you should be more concerned about your fellow man and you should be, you know, interested in how other people are living. And I am. I just think that, okay, here's the thing. I have really good health care and it's great and I love it. But there are those people who don't have good health care. So what this administration is doing is by spreading the wealth, nobody has any wealth. So we're all equal and we'll all be equally miserable, like shared sacrifice, for example. This idea that the administration's put out that we should share the sacrifice. I don't want to do that. I want to share prosperity. I want us all to be, you know, well taken care of and well provided for, but not at the government's behest, but because of the choices that we make in life. You know, and I understand that there are those of us who get, you know, breaks, you know, or life breaks in a certain way for us all, you know, based on, you know, what station we're born in and, you know, all of that. But I also come from a background where, you know, the majority of, you know, my folks didn't start out, you know, in a prosperous way. You know, they had to work for everything they got. My uncle, Frank E. Peterson, retired a lieutenant general in the United States Marine Corps, a great Marine fighter pilot, and the first black general in the Marine Corps. He attended not the United States Naval Academy like I did. He didn't attend West Point Air Force Academy. He attended Kansas State. He's out of Topeka, Kansas. And, you know, one of the first black pilots in the Marine Corps, fighter pilots. And he worked for everything he got, every break he got, and I followed that role model. Now, there are those who will say, hey, you know, well, not everybody can get those kind of breaks like your uncle or like you. Well, no, that's true. But should I suffer? Should my family suffer so that other people can have just a little bit? Well, I tell you what. Yeah, if I choose it to be, if it's my choice, not if it's the government choosing for me or forcing me. I'm not feeling that kind of love. So, hey, before we get started, we got to take care of a little bit of business here. And once we take care of a couple of these advertisements, then we'll get on with the show. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. I'm your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones. And, hey, we'll get right into it. Got a pretty good show coming up, so we'll talk about it in just a few minutes. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Good morning, January 20th, 2017, the last day of Barack Obama's 8 years as president.
8 tough years for many as unemployment continues climbing.
With debt to China reaching record levels, some analysts believe the Chinese have overtaken the United States.
8 years ago, we were promised hope. Today, many believe their American dream has been lost.
The Republican National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Why is Ayn Rand's great novel Atlas Shrugged a bestseller today, more than half a century after it was written? It's because our real world today is just like the fictional future that Rand foresaw in Atlas Shrugged. It's a time of crisis and decay, but it's also a world of innovation and achievement. It's a world of heroes and villains, driven by very different philosophies. We wrote I Am John Galt to tell their stories. We look at the heroic innovators who are building our world and show that they're doing it just like the heroes of Ayn Rand's novels. They're using her philosophy of capitalism, reason, objective reality, and self-interest. Who is John Galt? Meet John Allison, the mild-mannered Southerner who created one of America's greatest banking empires. He did it with Ayn Rand's philosophy by getting every one of his tens of thousands of employees to read Atlas Shrugged and live by its code. In the great financial crisis of 2008, his bank was about the only one that didn't need a government bailout. But the government forced Allison to take TARP money anyway. After that, Allison walked away, just like John Galt did. There are so many other Rand heroes in our midst. There's Bill Gates, the genius who built the world's greatest company and the world's greatest personal fortune, only to have his own government call him a criminal for succeeding too much. Isn't he just like Hank Reardon from Atlas Shrugged? And how about Steve Jobs, the brilliant entrepreneur who reinvented computers, movies, music, telephones, just because he thought it was so cool? He's got the same attitude toward life as Howard Roark from Rand's other great novel, The Fountainhead. Build it? I don't care if they come. You'll meet some real-life Rand villains in our book, too, the parasites who are trying to destroy the world. Remember Wesley Mooch from Atlas Shrugged, the corrupt bureaucrat who destroyed the economy? That's Congressman Barney Frank, who spent years subsidizing Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in the name of altruism. When Fannie and Freddie nearly wrecked the U.S. housing market, what did Frank do? Just like Mooch, he demanded wider powers. And you'll meet Paul Krugman, the rabid partisan pundit who spread socialism from the pages of the New York Times and thinks nothing of using the power of the press to destroy his political enemies. He's Ellsworth Toohey, the scheming, dwarfish newspaper columnist straight from the pages of The Fountainhead. These are some of the heroes and villains who move our world. So who is John Galt? I am. You can be too. Read our book and find out how. Why is Ayn Rand's great novel...
I remember America. Sure, you can still find it on a map, but nobody older than 20 thinks this is America. Even if coordinates are the same, we've lost our compass. You don't have a direction without reference, the true north. For America, it was liberty. When we lost the love of liberty, our understanding of liberty, it was just a matter of time before the rest of it was lost. Some think it started when the auto companies were nationalized, or the police state to control the internet, or when certain companies couldn't fail because their relationship with politicians made them too big to fail, and the rest of us, without political influence, were too small to succeed. Sure, that all happened pretty quickly, over just a couple of years, but liberty had been gradually devolving for decades. Some of the more astute, like Ayn Rand, saw it about 50 years before others. She warned us, but people didn't believe it could happen here until it did. Laws had been used to loot productive individuals and businesses, but in the new millennium, under Bush and Obama, graft, corruption, and crime crony capitalism were no longer hidden behind closed doors. The looters and their laws came out of hiding like rabid animals that were no longer afraid of humans. It was brought into the spotlight, and it was celebrated as enlightened economic policy. Ayn Rand asked the question Atlas Shrugged that the rest of us were asking 60 years later. Which failing financial institution will the administration pluck from the flames of crisis? And which will it let roast? Which market or investment technique will the regulators bless? And which, in a capricious change of rules, will it condemn or outlaw? As John Galt said in his radio address,
you decided you had a right to your wages, but we had no right to our profits. You called it selfish and cruel that men should trade value for value. You've now established an unselfish society where they trade extortion for extortion.
People who had never produced or managed anything tried to manage every aspect of our lives, and they brought production to a standstill. And eventually, they decided to micromanage the food supply in the name of fairness and safety. And we all know what happened then. Fiction can be a powerful influence, for good or bad. It's too bad more people didn't read Atlas Shrugged. They might have realized where this was heading.
All right, and we're back with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report, Situation Report. I have yet to get the new title of my show down cold without using the old name. But hey, I'll get the hang of it pretty soon. Let's talk about this for a moment, though. It's delicious. And I'm loving every minute of it. President Obama's plan to require individual Americans to purchase health insurance or pay a penalty. According to a federal judge in Pennsylvania, exceeds the power granted both the president and Congress by the Constitution. A federal District Court judge ruled Tuesday in Harrisburg. I love you, Harrisburg. Federal District Judge Christopher C. Connor said the federal government's power to regulate interstate commerce does not give it the power to compel individual citizens to purchase products against their will. The nation undoubtedly faces a healthcare crisis, Connor said. Scores of individuals are uninsured, and the cost to all citizens are measurable and significant, he said. Yeah, that's true. But think about the idea of forcing the government, forcing an American citizen to buy something. What's next? One of my guests in the room wants to buy a BMW diesel or a BMW with a six-inch, a six-cylinder engine. Uses up 3 to 4 more gallons of gas than a hybrid. The government decides that in America's own best interest that one of my guests can't buy that vehicle. That if one of Dr. Jones's guests wants to purchase that vehicle with a six-cylinder combustible engine, they'll have to pay an extra $3,000 for it, a fine, if you will, in taxes. Because that's the way the government will force us to purchase items that we don't really want. And the healthcare law is exactly the same. It's forcing us to purchase something that we wouldn't necessarily want to purchase. If this healthcare law passes, the floodgates will open and set a precedent for the presidents for the government to mandate almost anything, because the government will be able to say, hey, the Supreme Court set precedents by saying that we could indeed force ordinary citizens to purchase an item or pay a fine. We could force that because the Supreme Court has ruled. So why can't we force a citizen to purchase the type of vehicle we want? Now, I've heard the argument that, well, the government, state, local, federal, they force you to buy car insurance. That's something that is mandatory. Car insurance is mandatory. Well, not if you don't own a car. The government will not force you to buy car insurance if you don't buy a car. The choice is yours. If you buy a car, then you must have insurance for your protection as well as the other motorist. I dig that. But you have a choice. You can walk. You can take the bus. You can ride a bike, none of which the government is forcing you to do. You see, it's all about choice. And whether we have the choice to either buy insurance or not, whether it's mandated, because see, really what the government is saying is that they want that it's mandatory that you buy insurance, not so that you have insurance for yourself, but so that another person who is less fortunate than you maybe can have insurance. It's not even about you. It's about you making a sacrifice for someone else. Now, Fortune 500 companies are already saying that they intend, if this law is enacted, to stop providing insurance altogether. So that whole idea about, hey, if you like your doctor, if you like your plan, you can keep your plan. So much for that. And some of my liberal friends, and you know who you are, who it's a good idea to mandate health care, well, we'll see how that goes. Because I tell you what, I have free health care for the rest of my life as a result of my service in the military. And I'll tell you right now, I set foot on the property of a VA hospital three times, a total of three times. That'll never happen again. The VA hospital is a government-run hospital. Government service workers run those hospitals. The place is like the post office. Think of the post office and how it functions and how one is treated in a post office. And then put that setting in a hospital. And you're done. Why? Because the government is paying the employees. They don't have to vie for your business. They're being paid automatically. They're going to get paid no matter what. So they don't have to be nice to you. They don't have to treat you with care. Because there's no incentive for them to do so. The same thing with government-run healthcare or the VA hospital. They don't have to treat you nice. A lot of times they believe that you don't have any other place to go. So scores and scores and scores of military veterans, young and old, head into the VA hospitals and clinics, and they're treated crap. They're treating crappy. Certainly not indicative of their sacrifices. Certainly not in homage to their sacrifice. They're treated like derelicts. They're treated just as you or I would be treated at any of our local postal services, post offices. That's how they roll. Moving on. Obama is being sent a message in New York. It appears that former Congressman Anthony Weiner's seat is up for grabs. that the Republican who is vying for that seat in New York is leading by 6 points. The Republican in a Democrat district that's Democrat by over 80%. I'm talking 80%, you all. Wow. So what we see here is a situation where being a Democrat is not such a good thing. And folks are saying that, hey, if Obama is being sent a message by the Democrats, a message by bringing a Republican to this seat, which is going to be phased out at some point. Well, anyway, so it's not going to even be a district for very long. So Obama is apparently being sent a message by the Democrats. Get off your butt. Yeah, we'll see how that message goes. I tell you what. Police are arresting union radicals. Apparently, Jimmy Hoffa's telling folks to take those sons of bitches out. It's being taken to heart because folks are saying, hey, let's take those sons of bitches out. That's what Jimmy Hoffa said. So they're looting and rioting, name-calling, racial slurs. I thought that was only reserved for the Tea Party. Wow. I tell you, the Democrats are unraveling here. They are unraveling. It is embarrassing. And I feel for them. Honestly, I do. I think that the Obama plan is not working. Obama is being rejected. Socialism is being rejected. Shared sacrifice is being rejected. America is not about shared sacrifice, Mr. Obama. America is about prosperity. We all want the best. We all want the fine things in life. And a lot of us aren't going to get them. That's just a fact. But we all want them. And I can't think of a single person, no matter what they say, liberal, Republican, conservative, whatever, who will tell you that they're willing to give up the wealth, whatever that may be, in order that somebody else will have an equal share in it. I you know what? I hear it all the time. Folks are saying, well, you know, I would be glad to pay a little bit more so that another person could have something to eat on their table. I would be glad to. Okay, well, here's the deal. Go out and buy some groceries. Take them to a shelter. Organize your friends and family and go out and stock up. Go to Sam's Club and just buy $500 or $600 worth of food. Take it to your local shelter. If that's the case, but they won't do that. No. Sanctimonious platitudes. It's all about saying what you want to do, what you would do. Actors and actresses are saying, oh, I would be glad to pay a little bit more. I wouldn't mind paying a little more in taxes. Well, go right ahead. There's a provision in the tax code that allows people to do that if that's what they so desire. But I don't desire to do that. I give to charities every year, all year long. I take food during Christmas time. I help out for Toys for Tots. I do my part. But I do my part because I want to, not because the government tells me to or forces me to. I'm not feeling that kind of love. Now, if some of my listeners and some of my liberal friends feel like they want to share the wealth, spread the wealth, by all means do. By all means, spread your wealth. But let it be my decision whether I want to spread my wealth. Let me decide. I may decide that I don't want to share my wealth. Obama's got people all up in arms. I thought this guy comes into office and he's supposed to be about calm. He's supposed to be about a new way of doing business, new way of politics. He lied. He lied to everybody. Of course, I didn't believe any of it, but he lied. The guy is contentious, and he has divided the whole country. He has not just divided the haves versus the have-nots, the we versus them. He's divided the whole country. Folks are comparing him with Lincoln. Well, I guess if you want to compare a president who has divided the country with Lincoln, that's the closest they come. Not to say that Lincoln divided the country. It was on its way to being that way when he came into office. But I guess because I just said that, there are those who will say that George Bush is responsible. I've had friends say to me just this week, I said, well, Obama is, he's been a failure. His policies are a failure. What do they tell me? To a man, to a woman. Well, you know, George Bush created all this mess. George Bush did, I stopped him right then and there. George Bush is no longer in office. Let it go. Obama's been in office for 3 years now. When has it become his responsibility? We have a caller on the line on the C. Robert Jones situation report. Caller, you're on.
Hey, it's Steve from NNF. How you doing tonight, Dr.
Hey,
Jones?
Hey, Steve. There he is. Where you been, man?
Oh, man. Just been, you know, somebody's got to go to work in this country, you know, so.
yeah.
Just been out there trying to, you know, survive. But, yeah, you're right, Dr. Jones. I mean, even if we did increase taxes. It increase in taxes is like a new bailout. We need an economy that runs without stimuluses, without, you know, a housing bubble, a tech bubble. We need an engine. This is like the engine in my Cadillac outside. I don't need to put an additive in that engine to keep it running. It runs on its own. We need an economy that runs on its own without all this inflation, printing money in the 90s, and all these bubbles we keep going through in the last 20, 30 years. We need an economy that runs on its own. And that will be the new bailout. Something happens, increase taxes. It'll never end. It'll go on and on forever until there's a collapse. What do you think about my comment, Dr. Jones?
Well, you're absolutely right. But I'm not so sure, you know, that this administration wants prosperity for all of America. Obama laid out this plan that he's laid out, and Axelrod saying that there'll be no bargaining, that it's either this plan or nothing. And I think that Obama, in order for Obama to get the masses back on his side, given his horrible poll numbers with every demographic, he has to create a villain. And he's done so quite masterfully for an idiot. He's actually done so. He's put the ball in the conservatives' court, and he's saying that, hey, I'm asking for all these outrageous policies to be implemented. I know they won't do them, and as soon as they don't, then I'll make them the villain. I'll look like the good guy, and I'll get reelected. The guy doesn't care about America and Americans and middle America and all. He wants to be back in power. For him, it's about power and more power. Billy writes in the chat room, for every dollar we send to the government, we get 15 cents back in service. He's exactly right.
Yeah, Dr. Jones, he's right about that. You know, it's just, it'll go on forever. The government will keep growing and growing like a cancer. It just, and they think, oh, we need more government, more regulations. And so you want to, like I said, you don't want to hold the gun to the guy that's doing the hiring, hold the gun to his head. And it's like, you know, there is no free lunches. The free lunch days are over. Canada cut spending in 1995. Their economy grew. They were at the same debt percentage we had before they raised the debt ceiling in August. 70%, that's what Canada was at, debt-to-GDP ratio. They cut spending. Their economy grew. I mean, they are like, this is something brand new that's never been done before, Dr. Jones.
You're exactly right. And there's an article on the Hill today that says that under the Obama administration, poverty is at an all-time high. It says that most Americans were living below the poverty level in 2010 than in any other recorded point in American history. In the first full year after the recession that ran from 2007 to 2009, 46.2 million people fell below the poverty line. That makes the fourth straight year of increases and the highest number recorded by the government in 52 years of collecting data, the Census Bureau reported Tuesday. So, hey, I tell you, there will be folks, if I talk to one of my liberal friends and I say, look at this data here, what do you think they'll do? Oh, they'll blame Bush. Well, Obama's just trying to clean up Bush's mess. Bush made such a mess that Obama is cleaning it up, and it's going to take a while. Give him a chance. Give him a chance to do what? One would think that there would be at least some growth after 3 years, but there isn't any. We're continuing to spiral down. I thought, you know, if this guy's so brilliant, how come he can't stop the spiral? I mean, spending more money that we don't have, borrowing more money so that he can spend it just so that he could be reelected?
Yeah, Dr. Jones, if it was up to him, we would have the worst credit rating in the world if it was up to him.
Yeah. It's amazing what a slogan like hope and change can do for you. I mean, just a slogan. And folks are weeping and calling the man Jesus, Benjamin Franklin, Mahatma Gandhi, and all sorts of other names. I got a note here that Obama's poll numbers once again have hit rock bottom. President Barack Obama's disapproval rating has reached a new high of 55%, while the number of Americans who think he is a strong leader has dropped to a new low, 48%, according to a CNN ORC poll released today. The guy is going downhill. Only 39% approve of how he's handling unemployment, and just 36% approve of the way he is handling the economy. It's not surprising when more than 8 in 10 think the economy is in poor shape. But his deal is to fake this outrage, demand that Republicans pass his bill now, right now, pass the bill now, pass. They're demanding it. So, and to what end? It's simply because he needs a villain. He needs a villain. He needs to blame someone. Tell me, who do you want to lead you when they're constantly blaming? Imagine you're the leader of a team in your workplace, and you go in and you're tasked with solving a problem, and you spend the majority of your time blaming the person who was fired or who left the company for every mess that's been made, and you've been there like 3 years. How do you think that will work out in your company, Steve? Probably not very well.
Yeah, you get fired. You know, blaming Bush, that is, it's getting old. And, you know, the magic tricks are over, folks. The deficit spending is coming to a close. You got to deal with the fundamental problems in America, you know, and in the military spending. Dr. Jones, I never got your ideology on military spending. Would you ever? Would you support cutting military spending? I don't know what you think about that. The 900 bases and all that. How much would you cut if you had to push come to shove, Dr. Jones, to balance the budget?
Let me tell you why I'm not for cutting any more bases. We have cut a lot of bases. First, I'm a historian. And being an historian, we don't like to see military – I don't like to see a military bases cut, because there's so much history and nostalgia and culture developed at these bases. Can you imagine Fort Bragg, after all this time, more than 100 years, being closed? Or – Camp Pendleton in California being closed. Recently, as 6 years ago, the largest U.S. naval base in the world that we had was closed. It was U.S. Naval Station Roosevelt Roads in Puerto Rico. I have such great fond memories of that base, and the base was still very much viable. It was a great base, but a fighter pilot during a gunnery run, inadvertently dropped one of his bombs in a populated area, and a few people were killed. Jesse Jackson and his hideous wife went down and protested, and as a result, the base was closed. It was deemed that the base wasn't necessary anymore, and most of the personnel and the functions of that base were moved to Florida. But the base was a central point of our strategy in protecting the United States of America. It was very important, but it was closed for political reasons. Those kind of base closings make no sense to me. In a lot of ways, it cost more to close the base in the short term than to keep it. Imagine all of the removal of waste, the removal of equipment, the removal of everything that's on that base, buildings, everything. It costs millions, and in some cases billions of dollars to remove those bases. And those funds are not recouped by the government. The government simply takes that money that they save and spend it somewhere else. So it's not like...
What about other countries paying for our bases to be there? They're benefiting off our protection. I think other countries need to step up. NATO is like 70% of the world's military spending. I think other countries, they need, especially Europe, they need to step up and pay for our bases. What do you think about that idea, Dr. Jones?
Well, you know what? I agree, but here's the thing. Military installation, for example, the bases that we once had in the Philippines, in Subic Bay, the Philippines, we would maintain the property. The property would be leased to us for a few million dollars a year. And in lots of cases, the property is vast. And we pay for maintenance and upkeep of the property that we've leased. And not only are we paying to lease the property for a set number of years, usually it's like 50 years at a time. So, for example, Subic Bay was like that, you know, the Philippine naval bases. And but the population, not only do they get that, but when the sailors come into town, the sailors spend tons of money. Imagine being on a ship for 60 days at a time, 30, 40 days at a time. You've accumulated a great deal of pay. You get off, you go to shore, and you spend a ton of money. The bars alone, you know, the strip clubs, whatever they got there.
they're making big business for us being there. So I think aside from the bases actually getting paying for us being there, the bases should give us the land or lease us the land at no cost and then provide a lot of the upkeep and maintenance for that land. Because I tell you what, for example, Subic Bay, Philippines, the great deal of the workers there were Filipino. We provided a healthy growth to the Philippine economy by having that base there. But at one point, the Filipino government said, "Hey, we don't want you here anymore. Your lease has expired, and we'd like you to go." And America left. It just about 10 years ago. And now the economy in the Philippines has crashed. Because half of their economic wealth left when the US Navy left. So I think you have something there, Steve. They should not, I'm not saying they should pay us to be there, but I would suggest that they should, that the land that we have to use there be extended for not just 50 to 60 years at a time, but maybe 100 years at a time, and that you know, the land should be provided to us because we provide so much. Now, indeed, with all that prosperity comes crime, you know, and graft and, you know, prostitution and a whole lot of other stuff, but that doesn't mean it wouldn't have been there otherwise. So, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, but I don't believe.
Yeah, I know. It's like as soon as you get ready to balance the budget, it's like all hell breaks loose.
Well, here's the thing. I think that with George Bush, who is a Republican, a conservative, he overspent. And certainly I do not agree with him engaging in a war with Iraq. I don't think it's necessary. Being a warrior myself, I don't believe that America should ever go to war unless we are being threatened directly. Then it's on. But other than that, I don't believe in going to other countries and going into battle. I mean, there needs to be a direct threat for any young man, young service person to be put in harm's way. And I don't believe my man, and I love George Bush, and I respect him a great deal, but where he and I disagreed was on the idea of going to war with Iraq. And I think it was useless, and it didn't serve us well. Now, on the other hand, I think the Afghanistan war was is completely appropriate. But I think that we should fight that war ferociously, do what we need to do, and then get out of there, you know, not stay there forever. You know, we have bases in Japan. We have bases in North Korea that have been there for 70, 80 years. You know, and we do well in these places. But the thing is, cutting military bases does not save us money. It's like you and me, maybe just me. I get some extra money. I'm more apt to take that extra money and go out and buy something at Best Buy or get some toy or some gadget or something, or buy myself something nice. I'm not apt to put it in a savings account and save it. The U.S. government is pretty much like me. They close a base. They say closing this base is going to save us $30 million a year. No, it's not going to save $30 million a year. You're going to take the money that would have been spent on that base and spend it somewhere else. There's no savings anywhere. You know what I mean, Steve?
Yeah, I know. And that's why there's so much uncertainty, because it's, you know, this the collapse of the economy is, I mean, us balancing the budget is unprecedented. I mean, we would be going back to Dwight Eisenhower when he balanced it. I mean, it's just so unreal to see the next Republican president coming in 2013 and balancing the budget. It's hard to imagine that. Could you even imagine the all the hell breaking loose over the special interests and fighting over money? Can you imagine all that, Dr. Joe?
Yeah. Yeah, I can. I can indeed. I don't know what the answer is. I think we need a strong fiscal conservative who for example, you brought up the idea of base closing. I was going to go to the next segment, but this is a very good – I mean, the questions you asked were very good. Suppose if we had – we have a conservative in office who say that in order to cut the deficit, we need to close a couple of military bases. Well, I'm not so sure that closing a military base is going to save that much more money, enough. But suppose a Republican came in office and he said, if we do this, if we do close a few military bases, if we do cut military expenditures, then that money will go toward the deficit, not to anything else, not to shore up Social Security, not to shore up Medicaid or Medicare or Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, not for that. It's going directly into the government coffers to pay the deficit. I would love for a politician who get into office and say that and mean it. But who would?
You have a good point. And what's the chance of us having a two-thirds majority to be able to be able to get through Congress? I mean, because these districts that's Democratic, they're pretty brick solid. I mean, if you don't have a two-thirds majority in Congress, it's hard to get anything done without a filibuster, Dr. Jones.
You're absolutely right. What we need, and you know what, I strongly suspect, and it is my fervent hope that the Republicans take the Senate and the House and keep the House in large enough numbers to really make a difference. If Barack Obama is reelected, the only thing that will save us from this clown is the Republicans taking the House and the Senate in large numbers. There can't be Republicans taking the Senate in just by two members. You know, and having enough that would make a filibuster proof. No, we need enough to change the course of this president, to make him truly a lame duck president. That anything controversial he puts out there, any signing statement or executive order, can be defeated. Because other than that, because this guy's been in 3 years, and we're on the verge of destruction with this clown in office. Can you imagine? 4 more years, and it'll be 5 by the time November rolls around. So
yeah, you're right. We got to get this. I wish they would impeach him about Libya. It'd be so nice to impeach him. But the liberals have lost their way, Dr. Jones. They used to be anti-war. And it's like liberals defend Obama no matter what he does. It is just getting disgusting. I thought a Democrat held meaning in the past when Clinton was in office, but Democrats pretty much support anything nowadays. Dr. Jones, what do you think about my comment?
Hey, Clinton was a centrist. Clinton was not.
Yeah, you're right. He wasn't liberal.
As far left mm-hmm. as Obama. He was in the center because Clinton wanted to be reelected, but Clinton also wanted to be liked. You know, he had that thing where he wanted to be liked. He wanted to be a centrist. He wanted to please not just one segment of the population. He wanted everybody to be pleased. And his way of pleasing everybody was to give everybody something. Democrat, Republican, didn't make any difference to him. You know, the guy wanted to be liked. He wanted to be loved. He wanted to go down as a great president. Obama doesn't care about being liked or being loved. He doesn't care about anybody except himself and his Democrat cronies, his liberal cronies. Republicans be damned. There's a certain segment, there's half the population of the United States of America that Barack Obama could give less than a damn about. Half of the United States of America. Yeah, to some extent he cares about those folks in the middle, the independents, because without them, he can't be reelected, no matter how many black.
And that's why Ronald Reagan was great, because Ronald Reagan could bring Republicans and Democrats together. That's where he has failed more than anything. He can't get bipartisan anything done. And every time a Republican tries to work with him, he just throws them under the bus.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And it's gotten to the point where now Democrats are wondering, you know, if this guy can even be reelected. They're wondering if reelection is actually a viable option for him. And there's been rumblings that folks are considering other options, running someone against Obama, which would be interesting for me. But hey,
yeah, I don't think he should be the Democrat presidential nominee. I think there's stronger candidates out there because Obama, if he keeps going away, 2012 is going to be just if Greece collapses, it's going to be a disaster. And yeah, he's weak. His presidency, his poll numbers are falling. Dr. Jones, I think you're right. He's just a one-term president. He's out the door, and we'll never have to deal with him again.
Yeah. Hey, the show is just about over. We're going to get ready to get out of here. Steve, man, come on back now. We miss you, and I hope you I'm glad you called in because you asked some really great questions. I did not intend to go down this road, but I'm glad you asked the questions that you did, and it was a great call. Thank you so much for calling in, man, and I hope you have a great evening.
You too, Dr. Jones. God bless, and I'll be on another show.
All right. God bless you, my man. And God bless the United States of America. I want to thank everybody for coming in. Beach Bum, Alexander Solo, Billy, Blog Talk King, guest, Ned King, Republican, Stay Mad, Tesla. Thank you all for coming in. Thank everybody for listening. I hope you have a great night. God bless you. God bless the United States of America. Good night, folks.
Lemon drops high above the chimney top, that's where